Good morning, and welcome to the Prospect Capital earnings call for third fiscal quarter ending March 31st, 2010. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to John Barry, Chairman and CEO of Prospect Capital. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Amy. Joining me on the call today are Greer Eliasek, our President and Chief Operating Officer, and Brian Oswald, our Chief Financial Officer. Brian?
Thanks, John. This call is the property of Prospect Capital Corporation. Unauthorized use is prohibited. This call contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of the securities laws that are intended to be subject to safe harbor protection. Actual outcomes and results could differ materially from those forecast due to the impact of many factors. We do not undertake to update our forward-looking statements unless required by law. For additional disclosure, see our earnings press release and our 10-Q filed previously. Now I'll turn the call back over to John.
Thank you, Brian. For the 3 months ended March 31st, 2010, our net investment income was $19 million, or 30 cents per weighted average share outstanding. Our net investment income increased 12%, and our net investment income per share increased 3% from the quarter ended December 31st, 2009, to the quarter ended March 31st, 2010. For the 9 months ended March 31st, 2010, our net investment income was $48.2 million, or 85 cents per weighted average share outstanding. We closed our acquisition of Patriot Capital on December 2, 2009. During the quarter ended March 31, 2010, we recognized $15.6 million of interest income in connection with the assets acquired from Patriot, including $6.7 million of interest income from the acceleration of purchase discounts upon repricing of three loans. We have additional liquidity available that can be deployed into other accretive investments beyond the Patriot acquisition and are currently moving forward a pipeline of additional portfolio and individual investment opportunities. We estimate that our net investment income for the current fourth fiscal quarter ended June 30th, 2010 will be 24 to 32 cents per share. We expect to announce our fourth fiscal quarter distribution in June. Thank you. I'll now turn the call over to Greer.
Thanks, John. At March 31st, our portfolio consisted of 55 long-term investments with a fair value of approximately $697 million, compared to the same number of long-term investments with a fair value of $648 million at December 31st, 2009. This increase in invested capital resulted primarily from a follow-on investment in Shears Foods, Inc., Shears, on March 31, 2010, as well as additional fundings to existing portfolio companies. During the quarter ended March 31st, we completed a $36.3 million investment in Shears, a snack food company, for which we received $35 million of junior secured debt and $1.3 million of equity interest. Concurrent with this funding, Shears repaid its existing $18 million loan to us. During the 9 months ended March 31st, we also made follow-on investments in portfolio companies and received principal payments of $15.7 million on loans. During the 3 months ended March 31st, we repriced our loans to AFI, Prince, and ROM. The revised terms were more favorable than the original terms and increased the present value of the future cash flows. In accordance with ASC 320-20-35, the cost bases of the new loans were recorded at par value, resulting in $6.7 million of accelerated original purchase discount recognized as interest income. Subsequent to March 31st, we invested $12.3 million in secured debt in Seton Corp, a leading vendor on-premise staffing company. Primary investment activity in the marketplace has increased recently, and we are currently evaluating a growing pipeline of potential investments, some of which have the potential to close this quarter. These investments are primarily secured investments with double-digit coupons, sometimes coupled with equity upside through co-investments or warrants, and diversified across multiple sectors. Gas Solutions continues to generate meaningful free cash flows with no third-party debt. In February, we hired Robert Byrne as President and CEO of Gas Solutions. Mr. Byrne has over 30 years of experience in the midstream sector. He is focusing on new business development and seeking new opportunities to help Gas Solutions grow beyond its existing footprint. In April, Gas Solutions purchased a series of propane puts with a strike price of $1 per gallon for the period from May 1, 2010 through April 30, 2011, and 95 cents per gallon covering the period from May 1, 2011 through April 30, 2012. Gas Solutions hedged approximately 85% of its current exposure to natural gas liquids based on current plant volumes. These hedges are expected to reduce the earnings volatility associated with lower prices of natural gas liquids without limiting the upside from higher prices, helping protect significant cash flows from Gas Solutions for interest and dividend payments. Thank you. I'll now turn the call over to Brian.
Thanks, Greer. On June 25, 2009, we completed a first closing of an expanded syndicated revolving credit facility. The facility includes an accordion feature which allows the facility to accept up to an aggregate total of $250 million of commitments. Since that initial closing with two lenders, we have added four additional lenders to the facility and currently have commitments totaling $210 million. The facility has an investment grade rating by Moody's of A2. We are working with our lenders to reduce the cost, grow the size, increase the advance rate, expand the collateral pool, and extend the duration of the facility, with such amendment targeted for completion within the next 45 days. As of March 31, 2010, we had $54.2 million of borrowings under our facility. With the pledging of additional assets from the Patriot acquisition, we have significant additional credit availability of $62.5 million, not including further leverageability of additional collateral that we could add to the facility with additional transaction activity, and not including further availability increases targeted by our facility amendment. Our virtually unlevered balance sheet is a source of significant strength in comparison with many over-leveraged competitors. Our equitized balance sheet also gives us the potential for future earnings upsize as we prudently grow our existing revolving credit facility, add additional secured facilities, and evaluate term debt solutions driven by our investment grade facilities rating at both the corporate and facility levels. We are pleased with the increase in desire of counterparties to provide us with additional credit at significantly more attractive pricing as compared to what the capital markets offered a year ago. Now I'll turn the call back to John.
Thanks, Brian. We can now answer any questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star and then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question comes from Jasper Birch at Macquarie.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for the color on the financing that you're looking at. Could you give us a little more color on the size and timing of your pipeline and where you're seeing deals coming from?
Sure. And good morning, Jasper. We have a pipeline of about $2 billion in size right now. And what we're seeing is a significant uptick in activity in the marketplace, which should not be surprising to anyone given the improvement in the economy year over year, an increase in financing activity and M&A activity, really transaction activity of all types. We don't, as you know, make precise predictions about when new transactions might close. They're not on a perfect conveyor belt, as you know. But we are working on a number of transactions which we hope and expect to close before quarter end and to drive earnings through both upfronts as well as ongoing coupons associated with those new originations. And we're ramping up significantly in terms of our infrastructure to handle that uptick in activity. We've made several new hires on the investment team at senior levels, at junior levels, to make sure that we've got all the horses in the stable to handle that volume.
Great. And do you have, do you give a number on term sheets that you have so far? And also, what's the time to completion in this sort of market environment?
I'll answer the second question while I look for the answer to the first. Time to completion really can vary. There are, you know, sort of shorter fuse flow opportunities in larger deals, club deals, syndicated loan type deals that typically are more on a 30-day cycle. And then direct origination deals where we're the play a heavy role in structuring, and that pertains to our buyout business, our direct lending business, and our lower middle market sponsor business tends to be in a longer gestation period that can really have a wide range from, say, 60 days to, you know, 6 months or even longer. Sometimes there can be a long gestation period indeed. Right now we have approximately, you know, 20 or so, you know, term sheets out. To answer your first question.
Excellent. So, just continue that. So you're seeing more club and syndication deals coming to the market?
We're seeing all of the above. We're seeing, you know, as you know, our business is balanced across sponsor finance, which is further divided into deals that we directly originate and structure, tend to be lower middle market, call them 5 to 15, 5 to $20 million EBITDA companies, sometimes larger. And then syndicated loans on the larger end. That's kind of vertical one, the sponsor business. Vertical two is the direct lending business, where we lend money to closely held companies, no institutional ownership. And vertical three is the buyout business, where we take a controlling interest and put up the debt and the equity. And we're seeing activity robust across all three.
Great, thank you. And then just quickly, what's the remaining purchase discount on the PCAP portfolio?
The unamortized portion?
Yeah.
Do you have that, Brian?
It's about $35 million. It's about $35 million.
Excellent. With that, I'll hop off for now and might come back on. Thank you.
Thank you, Jasper.
The next question comes from Aaron Siganovich from Lindenberg.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Could you talk a little bit about the repricing of the three portfolio companies this quarter and basically, you're curious as to how you convince existing portfolio companies to take the new pricing and what you're offering them in return. And then also, are there more of these in the pipeline to come in the future?
Well, as you can imagine, when you increase terms with a counterparty, it's not always a walk in the park, pleasant conversation. And the last couple of years have been a good reminder that, you know, the debt and the equity are adversarial to one another in a down case scenario. I would say that adversarial stance came as a shock to the system to some in the latter part of, you know, 2008 and first part 2009. But then counterparties became a lot more used to it and came to expect it. And this is really where the importance of covenants comes into play, which allows us to have a seat at the table to reprice transactions. And what we do with covenants is set covenants based on counterparty, often management projections. They're usually growing profits, and we hold companies to those projections by setting the covenants off of those. And even a company that's performing well that might have increased its profitability but not as much to hit its tightening covenants in the future might trip a covenant. That gives us the seat at the table for strong-performing companies, as well as for companies that are experiencing economic cyclicality to not just reprice on an economic sense, but also look for ways to reduce our risk, to ask the owner to put up additional equity, to pay us down, to provide some type of backstop, to have faster amortization. Really, each deal is a little bit different. We've gone through a significant wave of such repricings. We expect there will continue to be some in the future as well, but over time we'll cycle from, you know, legacy companies to, you know, to new vintages, where in a growing economy we would expect fewer covenant breaches, But if you have a down gap or a particular company that experiences an issue, then yes, that's why we have covenants. And we really stayed away from almost completely the, you know, covenant light, covenant not, pick toggle types of structures that seem to start to permeate the large, you know, flow name business in late 06 and 07.
Thank you. And then also with the new at the market issuance program, it looks like you've accessed that about $10 million this in the March quarter and thus far $31 million through this quarter. I'm just trying to balance what why you're issuing the equity when you have such low leverage, and why not take advantage of you know, accessing some of your leverage, or is it just until you close this new facility that you're wanting to kind of reduce your refinancing risk related to that?
Yeah, I think it's three reasons at least. One is we are in the midst of closing our extension. Because of the economic backdrop a year ago, our extension was only a two-year deal, which is, you know, one-year revolver and one-year term. And we knew a year ago we'd be working on yet another extension this spring. We expect for this next extension to give us a longer runway than before, and not to be doing this again a year from now. So that's one reason. The second is originations. We do expect to go up, and we are seeing increased activity, and expanding the equity base makes sense against that backdrop. And thirdly, it was accretive to shareholders given our recent trading activity.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Greg Mason at Stifel Nicolaus.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jonathan stepping in for Greg. Just a quick question on dividend income. Noticed that it was a little light quarter over quarter, and could you walk us through the moving parts of that line? And also, what should we expect from Gas Solutions going forward with the new puts?
For dividend income, Gas Solutions paid a lower distribution this quarter than it had in prior quarters. As the puts start to roll off in the business, and we have puts at a lower strike now going forward, closer to the range of a dollar per gallon compared to $1.40, $1.50 that we had been enjoying in the past. It's difficult to predict an equity, you know, dividend distribution from a portfolio company, but the puts we expect do provide downside protection at that current level. We're hoping that Bob Bourne, who we brought on board as the new chief executive officer of that company, can drive growth for future increases in distributions, but it would be premature to project that.
Okay, thank you. And moving to the credit facility, as the facility is approaching the end of the revolving period, could you talk about maybe some color on how the discussions, you know, are going with your lenders to this point?
Very well.
Okay. Would you expect the size of the facility to shrink, or the borrowing base to improve, or to allow mezzanine in the credit facility?
We are targeting an increase in the face amount of the facility, an increase in our advance rate, an addition of second lien collateral back into the facility that had been limited to legacy deals a year ago, an improvement in our spread by upwards of a couple hundred basis points, and a hope over time to attract additional lenders. We accomplished a lot of things in 2009, you know, buying Patriot Capital, expanding our business, closing on a facility during an extremely challenging time. And the thing that was probably the most challenging was to go from one lender to half a dozen last year, an environment where people had shrinking facilities, lenders pulling back, et cetera. We're very pleased with the diversification of counterparty risk created by that. I'm very mindful of counterparty risk. Want to have a lot of, you know, horses pulling the sled, so to speak, and we want to increase that diversity over time. We may have a closing of extension with our existing group, and then an addition of new lenders thereafter in subsequent closings. Now, our job number one is to get the deal done, and we're already well on our way in documentation and commitment letters and term sheets and the like.
Great. And then talking about the market environment, I know you mentioned your pipeline previously. Could you talk about what you're seeing in the market in terms of yields and IRRs? I know that you just purchased, or subsequent to quarter end, you purchased Seton. Maybe talk about the yield on that investment and really where those opportunities are today.
Sure. Deal structure-wise, we can broadly categorize certain deals into senior secured so-called unitranches, where we'll extend more than a regional bank might extend on a cash flow basis, sometimes collateralized as well, which was the case with Seton, by the way. Senior secured unitranches in the range of 10.5% to 12.5%, give or take. Second lien secured in the range of 12 to 14%. And then unsecured mezzanine, typically 14% plus. That's on a coupon basis, not including upfronts. And that's really for more heavily equitized sponsor deals, and those deals have a lot more equity during this part of the cycle than a couple of years back, with a minimum 35, 40% equity in deals, oftentimes more closer to 50%. And that also does not include equity kickers that we might achieve in non-sponsor direct lending. And, of course, our own prospect-sponsored buyouts, where the leverage being provided to the company is our own leverage.
Right. And also, could you speak to some of the opportunities in the structured finance or the CLO markets?
Well, we continue to look at that business as a potentially strategic addition to our business. We've examined and spent a fair amount of time in the last 6 to 9 months about potential acquisitions of CLO-type platforms, both middle market and flow name, and potential really asset management-type businesses that would operate as controlled off-balance sheet portfolio companies that we'd look to expand. Folks that spend time in that marketplace will tell you that as the CLO market comes back, sponsors will be expected to put up their own equity capital into deals, and there are a lot of CLO managers out there that lack the resources to put up that capital and are interested in talking to us about some type of partnership, a controlling interest in which we would provide that capital. So we're spending time on deals. They're very, people-intensive, relationship-intensive. We're very careful about who we might align ourselves with, if anybody. We've also not pulled the trigger, in part because that marketplace for new issuance has been, slow to reemerge. But we will continue to examine opportunities there.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Chris Harris at Wells Fargo.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Chris.
Greer, maybe if you can give us a little bit of commentary on how the portfolio has been performing here. Didn't know if you're beginning to see kind of revenue increases amongst your portfolio companies. I know your non-accrual investments appear to be relatively flat on a sequential period basis. So maybe any commentary you can provide there would be helpful.
Sure, Chris. As you pointed out, we had no new loans on non-accrual in the past quarter. We're seeing an uptick really across the board. We had a number of verticals which we had expanded diversity-wise going back to 07, 08, and adding healthcare verticals, food and beverage verticals, to pick a couple, that continue to grow both top and bottom line through the cycle. We're obviously very pleased with that. A lot of our industrial legacy energy-related book has started to cycle upward again. We sold out of a lot of energy services companies and companies with exposure to the natural gas industry, which we're pleased with because prices have gone down significantly and there's been a lot of volatility there. But other industrial-related companies, a company like Ajax, for example, which tracks very much what's going on with, say, a Caterpillar would in a larger capitalization context. In the first part of 2009, that company had experienced significant drops in new orders and backlog, really along with the rest of the industrial economy. And it's been a mirror image of that in the first quarter of 2010, with a snap back to not quite peak, call it 2007 levels, pre-recession, but getting very close to that. So we're pleased with how the portfolio is performing. We're pleased with the diversity that we added. We feel like we added the right diversity during the last cycle. We didn't load up on, you know, restaurants and auto parts and a large number of retailers and ad-driven media spending, just to pick a few that really were harmed significantly during the last downtick.
Okay, thank you. And then can you remind us what portion of your portfolio is fixed versus floating? I think I recall the majority of it's fixed, but correct me if I'm wrong with that assumption.
That's right. You know, the sort of the legacy Prospect portfolio, virtually all of the pools are fixed, or the greater fixed or floating. We were very mindful back in 06, 07 when LIBOR was 500 basis points that, you know, if and when the economy would cycle downward, that we would want to have interest rate protection, you know, as the Fed would start, you know, chopping interest rates, which, of course, is what happened. It had gone to 100 bips LIBOR had during the 01, 02, 03 cycle, and here we've seen LIBOR, you know, skirt close to zero. So we've benefited from that. The Patriot book had been more floating rate in nature. Of course, when we bought Patriot, LIBOR was close to zero, so we had a built-in, you know, protection there already. And a lot of those loans have been repriced upwards with new floors in place, so the vast or paid off at par, a book that we had paid in the aggregate 63 cents on the dollar for. So we're getting the benefit of those repricings for LIBOR floors as well.
So a lot of these new investments you're looking at, are they floating rate loans or they continue to be fixed?
We have greater fixed or floating. So we have a floor in I believe all of our new deals.
Okay, and then last question here related to Gas Solutions. I'm just curious, what happened to the last CEO that was there?
Well, we had our general manager, Steve Kennedy, continues with the business, and Steve's done a wonderful job. He's been associated with this business for a couple of decades. So Bob really is assisting Steve with new business development. We felt Steve was stretched thin in his existing responsibility. So we didn't subtract from the management team. We really added to it.
I mean, the point is that what Bob has a background in the midstream business and is well known to our major counterparties down in Texas. So his coming aboard means that we have multiple discussions for joint ventures, for increases of volume through the plant. The last time I looked, I think it was 36% capacity. And so we're looking for Bob to be additive to all the wonderful things that Steve Kennedy, as manager of the plant, has done.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Jasper Birch at Macquarie.
Hey, guys. Hey again, gentlemen. Just hopping back on. I was wondering if you could give any commentary on on your dividend, how you're looking at it now, especially, I mean, you guys have done a great job maintaining it, but just looking at your guidance for next quarter and this quarter, what you're thinking about with the dividend.
Well, we don't give dividend guidance and make projections. We really never have, you know, as a company. But I would say in general, how we're looking to drive earnings going forward to sustain the dividend really focuses on originations, growing the book, employing leverage. Our debt-to-equity ratio today is less than 0.05 or approximately 0.05. So we have significant upside through our facility, and that's why we're focused on growing our access to credit, improving the cost of that facility as well, which will help to drive earnings. We're also looking at move-the-needle transactions. You think about some of those meaningful transactions for us as a company. You know, Gas Solutions obviously comes to mind. We've talked about that on this call. The acquisition of Patriot Capital last year comes to mind as well. We're on the lookout for other move-the-needle types of transactions that give us upside, and we have that additional arrow in our quiver, if you will, as a company, apart from others that just focus on sort of sponsor debt-oriented originations.
Great. So it's just, you guys are pretty confident with sort of the long-term outlook, and it's really just a matter of getting levered up. Is that a good way to look at it?
We're very happy with the trajectory of our company, and we have significant debt capacity. When I say levering up, when you say levering up, I want to be careful to emphasize it doesn't mean, going close to one-to-one debt to equity. We've told folks and we told counterparties that, getting close to 0.5 debt to equity, which gives a significant cushion, is a better long-term target for us.
Okay. And then when you do look at the dividend, sort of long-term, I know that's how you guys evaluate it. Are you more looking at core income or taxable? Because I know the purchase discount law, that's not taxable.
We're looking at core as opposed to taxable. And you're right in that because a lot of that purchase discount is not taxable, we're building a cushion for the future vis-a-vis distributions.
Great. Thanks. Thank you guys a lot.
Thank you.
The next question comes from James Bellessa at D.A. Davidson.
Good morning.
Hi, Jim. Can't have an earnings call without Jim asking a question, right, Jim?
That's right. I've been around a long time.
I was getting worried, Jim.
Okay. You indicated that the natural gas business industry had slipped, yet the valuation of gas solutions went up about $5 million during the quarter in the last 90 days. Can you explain that?
Sure. Gas solutions, all the things being equal, benefits when natural gas prices go down. And that's because the vast bulk of the business is driven by gas associated with casinghead gas, oil-rich gas. And basically, if crude oil prices stay level and natural gas prices go down, then gas solutions, which is the spread of those two, does better. And the best approximate for that spread is the price of propane. And that's why when we look to hedge exposure, we look to hedge propane. And propane has bounced back significantly. We were quite fortunate in our risk management policies in which we were proactive to hedge propane when we saw record high prices back in 2007, 2008, and have enjoyed the benefits of that. Propane has come back from somewhere, I believe bottomed out around 60, 70 cents a gallon, upwards of over a dollar per gallon, and we're hedged a little bit out of the money from that.
And do you recall that you've ever marked down gas solutions?
I can't recall precise quarter to quarter. We may have made some slight adjustments along the way. And, of course, when we say we, as you know, our process as a company, as a board of directors, is to have an independent third-party valuation done. And that third party takes into account discounted cash flow forecasts, purchase multiples, and trading multiples of comparables.
Jim, I can't specifically remember, but if I had to guess, I think maybe – there was maybe one quarter, maybe two, more likely one, where it was marked down a little bit. The reason we don't have the intimate knowledge of that is that's really outsourced. The entire valuation program is conducted by Lincoln International, working with the portfolio companies, delivering a report to us, which we then check to make sure things are spelled right and the arithmetic is correct, and give to our board typically within 24 hours. And BDO's position is that we cannot vary from the midpoint of the ranges that are set forth in that Lincoln report. And if there's no range, just one valuation number, we can't vary from that if we want BDO to sign off for our financials. So as a result, the valuation process takes place largely in a universe that we don't spend a lot of time in.
Since making the Patriot Capital acquisition, you've issued, and that was for about a little over 8 million shares you purchased that for. You've issued almost 4 million shares additionally up through the recent tweaks. Can you go through the expansion of capital that you've gone through, and why are you doing it when you are unleveraged?
Thank you, Jim. And we addressed this a little bit, but I can expand upon that. We've been doing so in an at-the-market format, which we found to be quite efficient for capital access, about a 200 basis point cost of accessing that capital as opposed to trading dynamics and investor discount and underwriter discounts that can top in the range of 10 to 15% on a marketed deal. So we like that efficiency. We think it's very protective of existing shareholders. We're expanding because, quite simply, we expect for new originations to go up significantly. We like the accretion of such issuance. And we're doing so also in the midst of closing your facility, which we hope and expect to do over the next 45 days. Of course, is not a quote-unquote done deal yet. We're optimistic. No guarantees. We're optimistic we'll get it done. But in the interim, we want to make sure we can continue to fund the pipeline.
You said the issuance was accretive, but the really distractive to earnings until you're actually able to deploy the capital. Is that right?
That's a fair point. And I can't comment on the precise timeline of deals that we hope and expect to close in the next few weeks, but we're seeing dramatically ramped up activity across the board, which is why we have hired several new people in the last few weeks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
The next question comes from Henry Coffey at Stern Agee.
Yeah, I feel real old school since it's both Jim and I are the only guys who have been around the whole time. There's got to be a point, though maybe there isn't, where the equity issuance equation stops and the leverage process starts. But we actually don't really care about that. What I really care about is, you know, you've got a 41-cent dividend and a 30-cent earnings stream. Can you give us a sense of what the numbers would have to look like to turn that into a, say, 40 to 45-cent earnings stream? And how long that's going to take, given your existing pipeline? I mean, obviously, we don't want to tie you down to something too rigid. But you know, you've got to know your pipeline. You obviously didn't issue equity at these price levels without some serious ambitions. So, you know, short of giving us guidance, can you give us a at least a profile of what the company has to look like so that at this share level it can generate 40 to 45 cents a share in net investment income?
Right.
And then I have a couple of other related questions.
Sure. So Henry, focusing on the credit facility cost, I think, is an important one. Candidly, we don't love the pricing of the existing facility that we have right now. We felt like we were a price taker, along with a few other people, and you know others that had the unfortunate timing of when they were doing their extensions in the first half of 2009.
When does that facility roll over?
It matures a year from now, but the revolving period ends in June 25th, and so we're working on the extension right now. But my point is that we have an L plus 400, 200 floor facility. We think it's priced way too high relative to current market conditions, and that's why in our extension and where we're focused on with our term sheet and commitment letters is a significant reduction in floors, in spreads, an improvement in advance rates, an addition of junior debt to back into the collateral, all the things that we think are important to be able to A, access our facility efficiently, and B, do so with reduced costs. We do not want to load up on an expensive, inflexible facility, as I'm sure you can appreciate. So we're focused on doing that and then utilizing it.
Well, first off, let's stop right there. What would that facility have to look like in general terms for you actually to stop issuing equity and start using the facility?
Well, our intention is to use the facility post-closing of this extension, and we're fine with where we are on terms that we've pushed.
Even under current rates and terms, once you get your extension, you'll stop issuing equity and start using debt?
Once we get our extension, we expect to significantly use our facility. In terms of issuing equity, that will depend, Henry. I mean, it'll depend on if another Patriot comes along, for example, which is...
Well, but the Patriot hasn't generated or hasn't covered its share issuance. If you look at the shares issued, the 8 plus the 3, and divide that into the earnings of Patriot, it's not covering the dilution of the offering. So if another Patriot came along, and you weren't able to use leverage, using equity to buy it wouldn't, unless I'm missing something on the math, wouldn't add a lot. I mean, you gave us the numbers, which is very, very helpful. And if we disaggregate Patriot Capital from your results, what's the earnings on the shares issued?
Well, I think we had given a prior guidance that without accelerated accretion, we expected, you know, Patriot to generate 9-10 cents of incremental net investment income to the business. And
so that would put your earnings at 40, and they aren't there. Because they were at 40. They were in the 30s before you started.
Well, to be fair, Henry, we had also expanded the share count at the same time. So we did have a higher bogey to shoot for.
Right.
But I think really the main aspect here is we have a balance sheet that has no leverage.
Right, and that's the problem, that you keep issuing shares. So we're trying to figure out at what point are you going to stop the share issuance, start using leverage, and earn that 40 to 45 cents to cover your dividend. And if you could give us either a sense of timing or a sense of what the company would look like under that scenario, that would be helpful so we could at least sit down and kind of model around that expectation.
Right. I've given a sense of, without precision on exactly what we expect our spread to be. You'll see that when we close our facility in the next 45 days, you know, the precision around that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take that cost of leverage and grow the balance sheet to a 0.5 debt to equity ratio, I think that'll get you into the comfortable zone, Henry.
Okay. Gladstone cut their dividend in half and their stock went up. Have you looked at that and given any kind of consideration to? You know, you don't need to keep bribing people to own your stock if you have a good investment opportunity.
Well, I don't know if we should be commenting what other companies are doing, Henry. There may be other specifics going on with that business. What I do know is we haven't made a specific projection on what we're doing with the dividend. The board meets and deliberates on that on a quarterly basis, and we'll do so again in June. It's not a forever decision. It's a point-in-time decision. We do appreciate the market, you know, context. No one's trying to bribe anyone, and I would take issue with that characterization.
Well, I mean, it's just – I don't think you do. I mean, I don't think you need to keep paying out that high a dividend to get people to invest in your company, given where the price-to-book ratio is. But now, on your debt facility, right now my understanding is you basically have to have every new investment put into the facility – approved by your lending group. Maybe that's too harsh an interpretation. Is that requirement likely to go away?
That is not an existing requirement.
Okay.
Nor do we expect that to be an requirement. You may be confusing that with other companies' facilities.
I think at one point that was the case with your one generation ago or something.
No, that's never been the case. I think we're in our fifth generation of facilities then. At no point in time have we had deal-by-deal lender approval. What we do have is, in the borrowing base, third-party input that's quantitative and mechanical in nature for calculation relating to specific collateral ratings,
mm-hmm.
And pertaining to independent third-party valuations.
All right, I must have misunderstood.
There's no point at which lenders can say, oh, I don't feel like funding this, so I'll stop. There's zero arbitrary, capricious
So once the facility is set, it's available to be used as long as the collateral meets certain objective criteria.
Yes, that's exactly right. And we have significant utilization today, even if you put non-borrowing-based compliant assets in. And if you put borrowing-based compliant assets in, then you get an iterative effect to increase the borrowing base further.
If we were allocating overhead to the Patriot acquisition, should we just use your management ratios, or should we look at it differently?
You should use the management ratios.
Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate you.
Hey, Henry, to correct one thing you said that I want to be sure is corrected, there's never been they don't have a veto or approval right, but also there's never been any requirement that each investment go into the facility. We can make investments and choose not to contribute them to the facility.
Oh, no, we understand that. I get that.
Okay.
Great, thank you.
Henry.
The next question comes from James Bellessa at D.A. Davidson & Company.
Thanks for a second question here. You have a line item now called potential merger expenses, and you attempted to do some type of proxy contestation with Allied Capital, and you spent over $900,000 in the most recent quarter, but for the 9 month, it's $1.1 million. Do I assume that it's all for the attempts around Allied Capital?
It's primarily for that. There were some other potential acquisitions that we looked at that we incurred small costs for, but the bulk of the costs are for the Allied investigation.
And those costs have stopped.
And you're talking about a pipeline of portfolio opportunities. Do you foresee yourself ever attempting to go back to try to take over another BDC just like you did with Patriot? Or is this unlikely to go in that direction?
Well, Jim, it depends what comes up, right? If there's another Patriot acquisition and we have a chance to bid for it on an attractive basis, we would certainly consider that.
Well, what's your sense of the market right now and the opportunities out there for takeover of other BDCs?
Well, the market was there were more opportunities at the end of 08 and through a good part of 09 than are apparent right this second. But you never know. And we're prepared to take advantage of opportunities as they come up. There are still opportunities that we're looking at, but one of the things we've seen is that, in fact, with respect to a couple of opportunities we've spent significant time on, and I'm thinking of two in particular, we were overbid by a very large amount. And in each case, we're wondering how, how the calculators work at the other companies, how they're going to make money on those acquisitions. So we've gotten into a little bit of a frothy market for the purchases of portfolios and even to some extent individual loans. And it's our experience, and when those things happen, trees do not grow to the sky, and the market does right itself. So we may be seeing more attractive opportunities a month from now than we see right at this second, which is fewer than what we saw mid-year 2009.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Our next question comes from Aaron Sagenovich at Ladenburg.
I just have a quick question on Manx Energy. I guess you combined a couple of your troubled portfolios, Appalachian Energy and Coalbed, and then added about $2.8 million, which is on non-accrual but marked at par. I just kind of wondering what's going on there and the future prospects for that, what the $2.8 million was actually used for.
Sure. So recall years ago we had a book of assets of very small loans to very small companies, many of which we subsequently concluded were subscale to be competitive. And that was the case with with Conquest and AEH, where we determined combining operations, reducing overhead in G&A would be a very smart thing to do with a quality management team at the helm, and a team able to attract also third-party equity capital to the business such that Prospect would not be the sole institutional supporter of that company. The additional capital has gone into expand operations. Manx is looking at organic growth opportunities as well as follow-on acquisitions. There's a pretty ripe opportunity to purchase both smaller services companies as well as smaller E&P companies, given the, in particular, the natural gas price, you know, volatility and depression that's occurred. Great time to be a buyer.
You know, the way to think about it is the quality of management that you can attract to a company with $1 or $2 million of EBITDA will not be the same as the quality of management that you can attract to run a company five times as big. And so once we found a management company that was interested in rolling these up for us and managing them on a consolidated basis, we did the work and we're happy to have made the change.
Do you think that this is something that eventually will come off non-accrual status, or what's the end game for this?
Well, the plan is for it to come off of non-accrual status. I'm sure you know that that's the plan. And right now, the Manx operation, it's a little slower out of the starting blocks than we expected, but it's nonetheless tracking what we were hoping. And I think really Brian needs to explain why that is on non-accrual, because not everybody here thought that that was appropriate, but there are accounting reasons for that. Brian?
Yeah, the reason it's on non-accrual is that it, you know, both of the assets prior to being consolidated were on non-accrual, and until they generate meaningful operating income and can show and demonstrate that that's sustainable, that loan will stay on non-accrual status.
So once you go on non-accrual, you can contribute two companies together to one company, roll it up, bring in new management, and even when that new management raises new equity capital, you still need to have a track record of performance with that new capital before you can put the company back on accrual. Nonetheless, you can hold it at par if the liquidation value of the assets is equal to or in excess of the debt. And so that's the situation there.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from James Bellis at D.A. Davidson.
On NRG is the question about that portfolio company. At one time, you had indicated that it was possible that you might monetize that. Then it faded, and then it's revived. I see that you marked it up in the most recent quarter. Can you tell us what the status is there and what you're seeing?
Jim, we actually marked NRG down a bit in the past quarter. NRG had some exposure to the natural gas market through manufacture of mud tank equipment going to new drilling rigs, and that market had slowed. Folks are projecting that market to pick up again in the future. So we'd written down our equity position. Our debt continues to perform just fine, and we're comfortable with our position there. In terms of a sale process, we don't think exiting now would make a lot of economic sense. And as with any of our investments, if we see significant, you know, growth potential, we're more likely to hold on. We don't have a particular pressure to exit at any given point in time, particularly as a company that runs in the macro sense with low leverage. But if we got a nice compelling price and off of a growth uptick, we could potentially look at that again.
We also have there, Jim, a very good, strong management team that is looking at other opportunities in a market that's a little depressed for them. We hope that they can close on some of those. The other thing that we've noticed is that which is a testament to the competence of the team, is when mud tanks were not in such demand as they had been before, the company diversified its backlog into other areas quickly, protecting the revenues and cash flows, which, as you know, is not something that's so terribly easy to do. So we have, I guess, an optimistic view of the future of NRG, particularly if this management team can buy one or two other additional operations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to John Barry for any closing remarks.
Well, I think we're all set. We don't have any closing remarks except we're hungry for lunch.
Thank you all.
Bye.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.